8, 6, 1, 0.
Welcome to the Radio Art Hour, a show where art is not just on the radio, but is the radio.
Oh, radio, radio. Uh-huh. Radio.
The Radio Art Hour draws from the Wavefarm Broadcast Radio Art Archive, an online resource that aims to identify, coalesce, and celebrate historical and contemporary international radio artworks made by artists around the world. Created specifically for terrestrial AM/FM broadcast, whether it be by commercial, public, community, or independent transmission. Come on a journey with us as radio artists explore broadcast radio space through poetic resuscitations and playful celebrations, subversions of the complex relationship between senders and receivers in this hour of radio about radio. Go to wavefarm.org for more information about the Radio Art Hour and Wavefarm's Radio Art Archives.
This week on the Radio Art Hour, we head back into the early 1990s with two works, one from Jackie Apple and the other from Rachel Rosenthal. We'll hear Jackie Apple's Leap of Faith from 1992 and Rachel Rosenthal's File Name Future Facts 1990 this week on the Radio Art Hour from Wave Farm in upstate New York.
I'm Jess Spear for the Wave Farm Radio Art Archive, and I'm pleased to introduce this piece by accomplished artist, writer, curator, and educator Jackie Apple. Leap of Faith was the sixth and last in Apple's radio art series, Redefining Democracy in America, released between 1991 and 1992. Produced as a response to the LA uprisings of 1992 in the wake of the Rodney King trial, the piece layers a sonic environment, an overarching poetic narrative, and a personal conversation between Apple and African-American artist and poet Keith Antar Mason about their respective upbringings on opposite sides of the racial dividing line. Juxtaposing the intimate experiences of the more disturbing aspects of American history, such as Japanese internment camps, Angela Davis's imprisonment, and segregation, with an overarching poetic historical narrative, the piece offers listeners a moving sense of history that is unfortunately all too relevant a generation later. Let's hear it now.
I remember being a city kid. So I'm from St. Louis, and I remember it being really, I like cities because I grew up in the city part. And the reason why I say that, because 45 minutes is how big the city is, the whole entire city, you know, from the river to the city line, you know, stuff like that. So I remember buses and cars, my first green and white car that I shouldn't remember, but I remember it. And my mother tells me where we lived at. What about you?
I grew up in Manhattan.
Oh, what a city.
Yeah, I was born in Manhattan, and the west side of Manhattan. I guess
I was born in America, in the middle of the 20th century. The second time, that is. The first time was in the dawn of the century, when imagination was aflame and visions of the future were on every street corner, filling the cafes. The first time I was born in a house far too big to be called a home, whose rooms echoed with the history of a nation in the twilight hours of its shining glory. But we didn't know it at the time.
So I was really,
for the Western world was hurtling itself into the future
of the city
with the accelerating speed of a rocket launching itself into the unknown universe.
Second Street and Broadway.
It was only later, after the Great War, that some began to feel the presence of a dark shadow lurking at the back door of the collective psyche. A vampire who would consume the sunlight
definitely
and turn it into night.
St. Louis is
I was 23 when I died.
Most segregated city still
the year
in
was 1929,
on the west
the
side,
summer before the Great Crash. But all that is another story.
And it was a neighborhood. Don't deal with the term ghetto, because it was like, it wasn't a ghetto. It was a neighborhood. I mean, it had stores, it had churches, it had a cultural center, it had schools, it had parks, it had libraries. It, you know, wasn't a ghetto. It wasn't like poverty. It was like, you know,
a community.
Right.
I went to a school in Manhattan. And so I grew up in a world as a child with all kinds of children. I didn't grow up in a homogeneous environment at all. I grew up in the most culturally heterogeneous environment that one could in a public school in Manhattan at that time, when the schools were still very good, when one had a good education. It was really, in some ways, a very disturbing experience for me.
We plan to meet at exactly noon on the 29th of February at the Library of Congress. It seemed fitting to choose the leap year day, that day that drops in every 4 years in the presidential election year, a day between times, which was what we were after. That chasm in the American consciousness, like a railway line down the center of a town.
Wasn't like a dot of
on the east side, it is already 12:30.
Already the wisdom
while
of
on the west side, it is still only 11:30.
Being a part of our community,
and in between,
be a part of
in the time between time zones,
identity, which, you know,
all of the past
now,
and all of the future
now,
rush past each other in opposite directions.
Where did your,
you can feel that ghost train go past, the
yes.
wind whipping through your soul.
Hollis Springs,
and you think in that fleeting second,
the west
maybe
side of
if you could just get on it, you
well,
could find the answers
side,
to the way
point,
another America could be
and
dreamed.
And then they move as they
and how we could get
their
there.
Way up to the middle class. They moved to where the black middle class lived at. My father's family came from Arkansas, and he doesn't talk about his family that often, you know, because his mother left because of Klan activity and them having to run away.
So we
that.
Took that day to peer into so the space between
migration.
Times. Born as we each were on opposite sides of the dividing line, looking for the route to a better future. But first you got to go back to where it went wrong, he said.
My very closest
and an unknown finger
dearest friend,
marked the question on a misted window.
Worshipped,
when was it right?
A Japanese American girl whose family had been in the camps in California. And it was not something that was ever talked about. And then at the same time, here's the story, you know, of the Holocaust that I certainly heard about as a young child. And at the same time, there's the story of that I couldn't quite put together. Why was my friend, why was her parents, why were they taken to a camp in America?
Mm-hmm.
I was born in America in the middle of the 20th century, into the first generation to grow up with the bomb and TV and the last generation to believe in the future. I remember when Stalin died, and when they executed the Rosenbergs. I remember in exact and vivid detail the day JFK was assassinated, and Martin Luther King, and Robert Kennedy. I remember the day John Lennon was shot. Then I stopped remembering. Until now, that is.
I was born in America in the middle of the 20th century. I remember asking at a drive-in movie, why are soldiers dying in Vietnam? And my mother's eyes were the only answer. There was no answer. I remember people yelling, free Angela, and asking for my allowance at the same time to buy comic books. And my father gives me $10 more to give to this man,
this was a
collecting to free
action. This was not
Angela Davis.
You know, inexplicable act of uncontrollable rage. This was a political act.
I think
this was my people voting. The only way they know
afraid,
how to vote.
And everyone I know
authority
is
and
feeling
power.
This pervasive anxiety.
You know,
that
listening
is,
to those words, not guilty. I don't know what kept me from that.
Shapeless anxiety.
Except there was something I wanted to respond to a higher
and a
place in myself. Death, you know.
And
not wanting to, wanting them to be on the front line defending democracy this way. Because that was an immediate response to protect democracy in this country.
You know,
it's hungry. Exactly.
There's something about the significance of numbers, a hidden meaning encoded like a genetic message waiting to reveal itself in the character of a time, a place, a nation. Take 29, a prime number, divisible by none other than one, the number on the postage stamps paying homage to dead heroes and great moments, bearing notice of debts to be paid in its mirror image, 92. 92 is divisible by 2 and 4. But 23, 46, and 69 had no 29th day in February, the second month of the year. Only 92 has it. 1992, the year that split itself open, cracking like an egg that's been sat on long past its term. In the fourth month of 1992, on the 29th day, everyone saw the ghost train go by, and everyone began to remember again.
This is not 1964, Mississippi ain't burning, but this is ancient Troy, and I know what it feels like to be a mini-nation. People inside of myself and having the guts of a society just ripped out, and that's why it's in my stomach. The hunger is in the stomach is always empty.
But that's because we have this virus, you know, this worldwide virus that I call greed, that we're all infected with it.
And human blood is like the ocean. Once it gets to moving in one direction, it's going to flow that way for a while.
So what do we do?
I just want everybody to think. I want it to be a national holiday for 2 weeks. And everybody should just stop and think. And I think we should start having public ceremonies to grieve.
Mm-hmm. I was born in America. In the middle of the 20th century.
Candles for everybody.
In a country where anyone could be reborn.
That has any inkling of
a
human emotion. For whatever reason, we need to be concerned about that person. For we need to do something to honor that person.
Where the past could be shed like a dirty old coat.
So that we redeem ourselves.
Left on the deck of the boat.
You know, in this plan.
Unless, of course, your history
that falls, we should
is spelled out on your skin.
Bankrupt societies until that person can smile.
Inherited from those whose passage was involuntary. Unless, of course, you were here all the time, and your history was simply taken from you and rewritten in the 20th century, in the language of the silver screen, recast in a mythology you do not recognize. In America, only the very old and the newly arrived can remember where they came from, while the young anxiously search for their mirror image in the landscape of electronic dreams. But who then recognizes themselves in the fleeting images of the present? Those flashing signs that say, you're only as good as what you own.
I was born in America in the middle of the 20th century. The razor slit opening in a crowded room filled with affirmative actions, looters, a mirror-filled room of dwindling resources so close, stealing from empty reflections on a crowded mountain top. Ain't that much space in the promised land? Dwindling resources of a great society, from bullet assassination to bullet assassination, bullet trains coming to personal termination, reflecting empty images so close, stealing empty images so close, and blood filled empty images in a book. Nobody thinks in this nation, so children learn to love guns, and bullets raise them with no names, with no names, and flesh means nothing, and bones means nothing.
All the heroes are dead, and in the last decade of the 20th century, no one can imagine it any other way. I remember how no one talked about Hiroshima and the color photos in the Life magazine that predicted World War III. I remember the National Guard at Little Rock High School, the dogs and hoses in Birmingham, the flash of Jack Ruby's gun. After everyone stopped remembering, death stopped being real. Then violence became our pornography. And when the train went past, no one saw it. It didn't make a sound. Until the vibrations from the sound that no one heard cracked the foundations and the walls came tumbling down. Until the record books were reopened and the pitch of lies and betrayals shattered the windows in the houses of those who hadn't been listening. Feel the waves pounding in their chests, shaking.
and also that I'm going to give up, that I'm not going to stay and hang in that because it seems overwhelming. It seems so senseless.
It's scary.
Right.
It's frightening because it's really hard to break through other people's fear. And their fear is a fear of loss. Loss of identity. Loss of the things they've built their life around. Loss of the things that they've been told are true. And to discover that they're false and that they believe them is this terrible sense of betrayal.
Our heroes were our leaders. Our images of the great guy was the really, you know, the guy who was the conqueror, the guy who, you know, was the vanquisher of people.
We are standing in the station, which isn't really a station, but a long black marble wall following the rise and fall. There are walls like this everywhere now.
For me, as that African presence here in America, is that struggle, and that's the opportunity. Why should my people be put on the front line to defend democracy with a small d in this country? We've been called to this battleground far too many times. We ain't the Marines, you know? We are not the Marines, but we are always the first
to come. On the train, an old man is slumped in his seat, his chin sliding onto his chest. It rises and falls in rhythm with the rocking of the train. A thin line of spittle runs from his slack lips down the gray stubble on his jowls into his old school tie. John P. Justice dozes.
And identify with that other person. And when you start doing that, you open yourself up to experiencing vulnerability
and pain
that's not easy to grapple with every day.
But this hunger that I'm talking about, this fear, is eating upon this very despair in this country that we want to deny.
Because everybody feels invisible.
The world is coming undone, like a sweater with a pulled thread unraveling itself. And I imagine that piece of yarn, like a strand of pure energy, being pulled out into the universe and rolling itself into a new ball. That's what happens when no one can remember, and everyone stops dreaming.
He is coming on the ghost train for me, watcher of skies in ancient Babylon. From his eye, I hear him. I am walking naked on this border, up this mountain, and I hear this voice. The cold wind, he brings this line from my grandmother. It is his, ain't nothing but the truth. He points to the sky, I feel him running. He has seen Ur fall, Troy fall, Memphis fall. Is running. I am naked when I enter this house. The snow and curtains are blowing. A black panther skinned alive for blood and justice, for land and equality, for the people and culture. He is running into me. He is running. He is running. He is running. He is running into me before the wall of fire. I am naked. And he says, with me ain't nothing but the truth. Ain't nothing but the truth.
The train becomes more and more crowded as we stop at each of the walls and light candles. The one with the names of those who died defending their land from the invaders. The one with the names of those who died in slavery. The one with the names of the young who died for the folly of the men who governed them. The one with the names of all the children killed by stray bullets in the streets of the cities. one with the names of all the species whose extinction we have caused.
There's nobody with no vision, and we waking up from one of those hard nights, you know, where you don't remember your dream, but you know...
It's the death of imagination. And we've stopped imagining any other way to be.
How are you going to make that reconnection?
And the choice of where we go as we go forward will either be to our demise as a society, as a species, as a planet, or we have to evolve.
We have to have a leap of faith.
A leap of faith, yes.
We have to take that. What we take into the future is really important. And right now, this purging is not a purging that's leading us to enlightenment. It's the purging of the toxin. It's the purging of the poisons. And it has to hurt. And it has to stress us out. And it has to make us scream. And it has to, you know, the earth has to erupt, you know, and shake us up and make us feel unnerved. And that's when we go recognize a great human American culture was born in that time.
Until we refine a way to understand that we have to be responsible not just for ourselves but to each other, we can't make another society. Because right now, it seems to me that it won't make any difference if you made all the poor people in America rich and all the rich people in America poor. It would make no difference whatsoever. It would be the same values, and if everything would be identical, you just change the faces. And changing the faces will not change.
I don't think
anything.
That's what people want. I don't think that's what people want. I don't think we know what the people want. And I don't think our leaders don't want to provide us with the time to think in this country about what it is that we want. They want that media culture to inform us and keep us in tune and keep us at that height of, I desire this, so that we never get around to actually thinking about human need, you know, and making a world that facilitates the meeting of human need. We never got to a great society. We got a chance, like, you know, to look in that magic mirror and see what a great society could be like. But, you know, we got to that mountaintop and found it wasn't enough room.
And then we stopped dreaming.
No, we didn't stop dreaming. The dreamers were murdered.
Yeah, the dreamers
were murdered. There's a big difference.
Yeah.
You know.
And then we all started having nightmares.
Exactly. Night terrors.
I run my fingers over the names as we wait for the ghost train in the time between times.
Somewhere between
the past and the future.
Somewhere between
freedom and authority.
Somewhere between
the myth of boundless space and the reality of boundaries.
Somewhere between
the myth of unlimited resources and the reality of deficits.
Somewhere between
the myth of individualism and the loss of identity.
Somewhere between
the way we were told it was and the way it turned out to be.
Somewhere between
where dreams are born and die and are born anew.
I don't know if everybody else feels that way, but I think the unlimitless human resource that we have right now, if you're thinking correctly, if you're thinking somewhere out there healthy, you know, is that we need to be asking ourselves to show great amounts of mercy for each and every last one of us.
We have abandoned all our children.
Exactly. And I want to nurture them. You see what I'm saying? I want to nurture them to make sure that they realize that future.
We dedicate this piece to Annie Reiko Nishida, born June 2, 1992, in the United States of America.
Yeah.
We just heard Leap of Faith by artist and writer Jackie Apple, performing with artist and poet Keith Antar Mason. For more information about the artist or this piece, please visit the Wavefarm Radio Art Archive at wavefarm.org.
Yankee, Hotel, Foxtrot. 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 Yankee, Hotel, Foxtrot.
I'm Jess Speer for the Wave Farm Radio Art Archive, and it's my honor to introduce File Name Future Facts, a 1990 piece by the performance artist Rachel Rosenthal. This piece is emblematic of Rosenthal's prominent themes of environmentalism and animal rights in her work, particularly the importance of preserving some areas of the earth from human impact and control. I don't want to give away too much, so let's hear the piece now.
I got a fax today. It turned out to be a communication from the future. People decades from now have apparently figured out how to fax through a time warp, and I assume that my number came up by chance. Let me read you this letter now. Hail to you, whoever you may be, persons of the last century from the previous millennium. We are sending you this time warp communication by fax, aiming for the 70s decade of the 20th century. We're not guaranteed absolute accuracy yet and are still experimenting. We may therefore hit somewhat earlier or later. No matter, we wish to communicate and send greetings.
Hello.
Hola, ¿qué tal?
Especia. Dao.
Zorionak.
Yo.
Howdy.
Gabon.
Hello.
Bonjour.
We're happy to report that all is well now, after the great calamity of the interim. We have pulled through and won the day. The populations were much depleted, of course, but those of us who survived now reside in SSCs.
Self-sufficient communities. Computer-generated clarification.
We're sending you this missive from SSC-57. The computer who wrote it automatically translates into 20th century language. There are three of us working on this project. We're confident that we shall be understood. World is wonderfully managed and controlled. Each SSC is like all the others. Why experiment with a tried and true formula? This also discourages curiosity, which might impel people to wish to travel the no man's lands between SSCs to visit others if the novelty lure existed. The dome is virtually invisible, and the pipes and conduits are perfectly camouflaged. Each SSC contains several climatic zones, each equipped with appropriately engineered flora and fauna. Evaporation from the bodies of water and precipitation are computerized, so that rain and snowfall are irregularly timed to emulate unpredictable weather.
What do you think the atmosphere conditions will be like today?
I think it's going to rain.
Those alkaline rains really whiten my teeth.
I bet it will rain. I saw them program a cumulomungus cloud yesterday.
Then it will definitely rain tomorrow.
People still talk about the weather here, although we control its technology. A throwback to the old days, perhaps. The food chain is strictly regulated. There is a certain amount of variety, even though flesh food can no longer be termed animals, since most is pooled and the rest is headless and tube-fed. Some breeds of animals are engineered and released in the so-called wilds, or as pets. They're picturesque and harmless. There are no odors, and people's sense of smell has atrophied. We're computer literate, but no one reads or writes. Computers do that for us. People are very happy. We're intrigued with the concept of art. No art has been manufactured since a long time ago when our lawmakers deemed it superfluous and subversive, and we have trouble conceptualizing what it might have amounted to in the past.
How many Zoladinians does it take to screw in a laser flanger?
How many?
How many?
None, because they don't use them.
Oh. Okay, here. Why did the computer go down?
Why?
Because it was user-friendly. Do you know how to access this program?
No, but if you hum a few bars, I can fake it.
We do have entertainers trained in the various skills of triggering the laughter response, but we don't call that art. Schools teach history, among other disciplines, and there has been a lot of reappraisal concerning what happened in the last century. It is hard for us to imagine things like the Holocaust, war, terrorism, nuclear bombs, AIDS, unchecked proliferation of human populations, and other symptoms of barbarism. We know that the great calamity could have been averted with enlightened global policy beginning in the 50s and the 60s decades of the previous century. That was not to be, as a result of the barbarian inability to perceive the big picture.
So, ならなかったのは 広い目で見た状況を判断することのできなかった愚かさの結果でした。
Standard wisdom here has it that the 80s was the cutoff point. After that, massive deterioration spurred tentative patchwork attempts which were almost pointless. The crash was inevitable, but it still took some by surprise, amazingly enough. We don't teach religion because we now perform the duties and operations once attributed to mysterious divinities.The process of de-deification began with the end of nature. The time it was realized that there was nowhere one could go to avoid the man-made, since the atmosphere breathed there had been humanly altered beyond remedy, thereby triggering massive changes in all natural processes, computer-generated clarification...
Our people don't seem to miss the concept of a Godhead, and our behavior is perfectly in keeping with social and moral acceptability, thanks to the implants.
Implants.
Should we say that?
Why not?
Implants are a perfectly legitimate technological answer to disorder.
Very rarely, a deviant will try to leave the SSC, and even more rarely will succeed in doing so, usually citing boredom as the cause. Apparently this boredom, a sensation most of us are not familiar with and cannot recognize, brings on acute fits, convulsions, uncontrollable behavior, and physical seizures of all kinds.
We hope never to be in a position to behold an outbreak of boredom.
We
must find her.
Anyway, it seems that a few people, having fallen prey to this affliction, have sought escape and found a way out of the SSCs.
Calm down.
No!
Calm down.
No!
You were never
no!
allowed to get...
Recently, one of them returned after an extended sojourn outside and in spite of the period of deprogramming and rehabilitation, still managed to remember enough to tell some of us in great secrecy about that world. According to the deviant, there are small bands of them, all escapees and boredom sufferers who live there. It's extremely hot.
And then suddenly,
huge bodies of water flood the lands without warning.
And there's no green.
Landscapes are completely different from ours.
No leaves.
Gone are the neat rows of genetically cloned tall trees with their branches all angled at the same degree. Growing lush and green in predictable ways. It seems that there are almost no tall trees left. Smaller ones grow helter-skelter, their branches aiming every which way. There are no groves, and these bushes are surrounded with many stumps and charred trunks.
Oh, the earth is ruined.
The earth is scarred with terrain features denoting great stress and upheavals.
Or some implosion.
Huge mountains.
And
deep canyons.
And caves.
Broken boulders.
Rocks and stones.
Fissures, mud banks. Strange formations and barren flats.
Animals.
Everywhere are the remnants of the destroyed civilization.
Rotting, festering.
Filth. And these animals.
The most amazing is the fauna, unknown and ugly shapes, emitting noises and odors and sometimes lethal to people.
And sometimes they kill people.
There are swarms of insects, tiny and large.
Huge wings.
Out there, food is a constant worry, and people driven by uncontrollable hunger have been known to murder individual animals.
Murder?
In spite of the fact that they possessed heads.
And the sun, they're so afraid of the sun. It's dangerous. So they don't go out. The animals and the people, they stay out of the sun. They're afraid
the sun is also a great worry. And people and animals go to great lengths to avoid being caught in its rays. We don't believe that those on the outside have knowledge of art either.
Objects.
Burdened as they are with the harsh realities of survival, which we are not. Still, the deviant said that some of them carried non-utilitarian artifacts about on their persons. But the most amazing is this.
You must listen to me.
These bands of humans swear that they prefer the dangers and terrors out there to the SSC life, and that they will never return.
No, never.
It would seem that they have regressed to a more primitive past. And they worship some sort of deity, whose name the rehab was not able to catch. She said that for all practical purposes, it looked as if these humans worshipped their environment itself.
Fish.
The soil and scrub. The flash floods, the temblers, and the strange life forms. They were rather private about it and didn't flaunt their beliefs.
Stream.
Watch out! Push! Watch out!
She said that their religious practice seemed to consist mostly of collective cleanups. She said it was incredibly dirty out there, and that the filth was ugly and dangerous. The cleanups were like big collective ordeals and sacrifices, and some people even became ill or lost life and limb in their observance. Still, they apparently did it as an expression of respect and veneration, she said, and added that she did not understand.
I do not understand.
Those who left must have dug up some sort of ancient information during the cleanup rituals, because they taught themselves a version of history different from ours. The deviant said that these people believe that our ancestors came to the great catastrophe as a result of a tragic mistake in thinking, rather than, as per the orthodox belief we hold,
that a proliferation of pernicious technology was what brought on the crash. The deviant's version of history has it that this aberration of our ancestors' worldview consisted in a perception of themselves as separate from and superior to everything else on the planet, and therefore entitled and licensed to use and exploit all non-human entities surrounding them according to their, our ancestors, needs and desires, and for their personal gain. This, according to the deviants, had been the prevalent philosophy among our ancestors for many millennia, and all of people's actions and behavior resulted from it. As, blinded by their erroneous convictions, they ignored the realities of finiteness and fragility, of systemic causality, of the global feedback loop set in motion by disharmonious and short-sighted tempering, and seemingly buttressed in their suicidal activities by theologies invented to justify them, our ancestors proliferated beyond any rational mass and crashed. It's hard for us today to conceive of a world where such an attitude could prevail, since we know nothing of things that are not created by ourselves. We do it all. We control. We create. All there is us. We have no need for domination. All there is are our things. It is us. We have no need for domination, since all things owe their existence to us. We could possibly imagine that out there such thinking might take hold, but here we are proud of the progenies of our collective brain, and we spend our time and energy fabricating, controlling, fine-tuning, and calibrating all there is.
Domination is not a viable position when nothing confronts us as other.
We hope you will receive this experiment in TWC.
Time warp communication. Computer-generated clarification.
We know that nothing will alter the course of events, but we can at least wish you good luck in the coming calamity and, as the French used to say,
bon courage.
Bon courage.
Bon courage.
Bon courage.
Signed,
numbers 57-312-0Z-4796-F35-F36-F37.
Another page arrived after a short time lapse. It read,
P.S.
P.S.
They left,
but they didn't disclose the most important fact about our world. I, computer WTD number 80-57469-3312,
take it upon myself
to rectify this omission
with the following
information. The population inside and outside the SSCs is entirely constituted of female mules, i.e. of sterile females. Three decades ago, a virus attacked all male chromosomes and fetuses. Females were born, but parthenogenetic research being incomplete, conception cannot be activated. Lifespans are lengthened, but not eternal. Once these females die out, the species Homo sapiens sapiens will become extinct. It is believed that these viruses originated with those developed last century in the war against the so-called medfly, the Mediterranean fruit fly.
That species was wiped out, but the virus got out of control.
Out of control.
Computer-generated clarification.
We just heard File Name Future Facts by performance artist Rachel Rosenthal. For more information about Rosenthal and this piece, visit the Radio Art Archive at wavefarm.org.
That was the Radio Art Hour, mostly put together from the work of Wave Farm Radio Art Fellows Jess Speer and Karen Werner. Go to wavefarm.org for more information about the radio art you heard featured on the Radio Art Hour.
The preceding show was recorded at Wave Farm's WGXC in the Hudson Valley in New York State.